This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
What if the man behind one of the most brutal college murders in recent American history never had to explain why he did it? And never will. We're, of course, talking about Brian Koberger, the accused killer in the Idaho student murders who stunned everyone by pleading guilty just weeks ago, sparing himself a trial and sparing the rest of us a shot at getting answers. No testimony, no cross-examination, no here's what I was thinking. As if that would make any sense anyhow. Just a few cold words from a guy who once wanted to become a criminal psychologist and now gets to study himself in real time from a prison cell. But while the trial we were all bracing for may never happen, the case is far from closed, because here's the thing. The gag order is gone, and in its place, we've got new evidence, new details, and new ways to understand what happened that horrific night in Moscow, and how close Koberger might have come to actually doing it again. Joining me today is someone who's been ahead of the curve on this whole thing, on the ground from the beginning. Pulitzer Prize award winner and New York Times best-selling author and investigative journalist Howard Bloom is with us. He's the guy who predicted a lot of this months before information has come out. He's written extensively for Airmail, NBC's Dateline, and his book, When the Night Comes Falling, has been looked at as a definitive account of the case thus far. Also with us is retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek. He's bringing his sharp eye to this case's psychological undercurrents, prosecutorial strategy, and whether this was just the start of something even darker. We're breaking down what's surfaced since the gag order was lifted. The obsessive stalking, the K-Bar knife timeline, the mysterious early morning phone call to his dad, and the reason why, according to Howard, Koberger may have taken the plea not to spare his own life, but to save his parents from the witness stand. This is where the story goes deeper into motive, into the missing red flags, and into how this guy obsessed with becoming a killer may have finally succeeded, just not in the way he imagined. So, let's start right there with the thing that's been gnawing at people ever since the guilty plea dropped, and also apparently bugging the president of the United States, Donald Trump. Even speaking out about it. Is it a failure of justice that Brian Koberger never had to explain why he did it? Or is this silence the final proof that he always wanted control over the narrative? Howard, let's start there. Let's start with the Trump comment that recently came out about the case. Asking the judge and incentivizing the judge, the request from the president to make him tell us why he did it.
Well, yeah, I've known Donald Trump. I knew him 100 years ago when I was a reporter at the Times. I did a piece on him back at the tail end of the 1970s. Mm-hmm. He took me to the tennis matches at Forest Hills a couple of times. I remember him picking me up in front of my apartment building in New York City in a long limo, and he was driving the limo himself. His chauffeur was off that day. So, and in the course of those years since then, there hasn't been, I can't think of one other occasion that I've ever agreed with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But today, no matter what his reasons for saying it, perhaps his distraction technique from his other concerns, but his calling on Hitler to take a stand, well, I support that. I don't think Hitler will be moved in the least, but
yeah,
it's I'm supporting that. I feel, it's a travesty of justice that Koberger can get away with just his terse responses at the sentencing hearing.
Well, especially now that this has sunk in a little bit. We're not just, you know, on that shocking day where Koberger came out and admitted to the guilt. We've had a chance to kind of digest this. We've had a chance to hear the families out, hear what they've had to say and their various reactions to all of this. And, you know, a couple weeks out of this, you know, how are you feeling about this? I mean, this does seem like a travesty, the fact that he's not going or he doesn't have to say anything. Is that the one thing that can happen here in this case now, is a forced explanation, not just confession, but explanation to try?
I'm not sure how forced it can be. I mean, the judge only has certain legal powers. Koberger is protected by Ann Taylor. Mm-hmm. I don't think he has to say anything. I think all this will remain hidden till he's sitting in his jail cell 10 years from now, and then he'll decide, I'm bored stiff. Why don't I tell all? Why not? You know, his vision was to become a forensic psychologist, a criminal justice specialist. Well, sometime down the road, I think he will achieve his lifelong ambition. He will become a forensic psychologist. Other forensic psychologists will come knocking on his jail cell, eager to talk with him.
It's almost like he's getting what he wants. Robin?
Yeah, I agree. And that's the travesty here, is that I think he's going to potentially get exactly what he always wanted. So, Howard, I'm curious about this, and I'm always kind of the glass half full until it spills over anyway. And, you know, the prosecutor, Bill Thompson, has got a really strong reputation of just being hard-nosed. You know, they said he's a hammer with a velvet glove. And all along during the investigation and all that's going on, we've always been a little amazed about how silent he's been or how acquiescent he's been to the defense. But so here's my hope. And this, I sometimes go out on the conjecture thing, but kind of taking in all the data that you've hypothesized with the targeting of Maddie Morgan, Mogan, as well as other people saying the same thing. Here's what I'm hoping. And here's what I'm maybe thinking, again, benefit of the doubt to Bill Thompson on this. Many, many times, upwards to 60 to 70% of the time, when you have a stalking of an individual, so let's presume that Koberger was stalking Maddie and he had targeted her. Many, many times there's journals, there's writings, there's something that goes behind that stalking. And since Koberger's been online earlier in life, kind of talking about his life and everything, I'm holding out hope until not that one of the reasons why Bill didn't go for an explanation is because maybe with the unsealing of documents, we might get some sort of an explanation if it's in there. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that might happen?
I think that's wishful thinking.
I think it is.
inside the velvet glove is a velvet hand, not a hammer. you know, Thompson gave his statement at the plea deal, and his statement was pretty much the same as the first affidavit that was introduced just after Koberger's arrest. Mm-hmm. He had no details there. If he had anything there, he would have, I think, shared it, but he didn't.
What do you think about, I mean, if we were to theorize and say this thing actually did go to trial, which we were all expecting, and Bill Thompson was going to be there as the prosecutor, and now that we know, obviously, Koberger took the plea, how confident are you that this would have been a successful conviction with Bill Thompson behind the wheel?
I think he would have delivered, actually. Yep. I think the DNA evidence was so strong, and then combined with the more circumstantial evidence, it created a mosaic where all the pieces merged, and it could only be Koberger.
Yeah. I want to ask about your thoughts right now, or any insight you might have on the family of Brian Koberger, his parents. Earlier on, when it was announced that Koberger was going to be pleading out, Steve Gonsalves had made a fairly angry statement against the DA and this frustration with him, saying, we know, and I'm paraphrasing here, when the tickets were bought, essentially insinuating that Koberger's family may have had more of a heads up on this plea acceptance than the victims actually did. What's your thoughts on that and anything you know on that right now about, you know, were they giving a little extra, you know, help to the family of Koberger over the families of the victims themselves when it came to getting this whole thing put together?
I don't know if they were giving extra help. What I think happened was that Ann Taylor was just more expeditious in moving things forward than Bill Thompson was. I mean, she notified the family right away as soon as the plea deal was settled, tell them to get out to Boise. And Bill Thompson just didn't even notify the parents till later.
Do you think that this was a result, again, now that we have a little more time and distance between this happening, that it was the motive of the mother that moved Koberger to accept this deal?
I still believe in that. I still believe that Koberger finally made his plea deal, finally agreed to a settlement because he feared that his parents would be implicated, that they would have to get on the stand and answer questions under oath, and this could impact them. Plus, of course, the fact that now he wouldn't have to face the long guns of firing squad.
Robin?
You know, I keep going back to trying to understand, you know, where he kind of falls, that being Koberger, in the scope of, you know, because right now the definition of what he did falls in line with mass murder, not serial killer yet. You know, but we keep theorizing, I do at least, you know, that this probably would have continued. And part of that is if he's targeting people, I'm also curious, you know, with the gag order slowly being lifted, but slowly trickling out, in any of the research that you did along the way, I'm going to do the worst thing. I'm going to ask two questions at once. Did you see an escalation? Because a lot of times, you know, there's an escalation of violence, an escalation of resentment and things like that that reached that breaking point, which we didn't quite see. At least that's been documented that has been released yet. Also, the second part of that is, do you think from what you've seen and the interviews you did, do you think there was anyone that you could identify? You don't have to do it by name, but do you think he had another target in mind after this?
So the first part of your question about an escalation. Mm-hmm. Yes, there was a dramatic escalation. When he first went out to Washington State, before he even made that journey, he had bought the knife and the mask. So in some part of his mind, I believe he was thinking about becoming a monster, thinking about becoming a killer. Mm-hmm. He goes out to Washington State, and he tries to integrate into the world of normalcy, to become a person who can go to pool parties, who can teach students as a teaching assistant at Washington State. But none of it works. None of it works. And finally, he meets this woman. Doesn't meet her. He sees her, I think, in the Mad Greek restaurant. There's no evidence that he ever followed her on social media. Right. If that existed, it'll be out there. If he ever spoke with her, that would be out there. And this is a secret. He focused on her for his own obsessive reasons. Was it her blonde exuberance? Something like that, I believe. And I think down the road, he would have killed again. And I bet his next target would have been another young, vivacious blonde, another rebuke to the world that he was living in. I think the thrill of killing would have left inside him a feeling that he had become what he wanted to be, and he wanted to have that, you know, thumbs up, felt selfie. He wanted to do that again someday.
Yeah, that timeline you highlighted here, pinnacle of him buying that, those things before he even went out there, before he even met supposedly Maddie at a restaurant that he attended and stuff. So yeah. Thanks for that.
And there it is. Brian Koberger, a man who wanted to become an expert on the criminal mind, has now ensured we'll spend the next decade trying to decipher his. Will he ever reveal what was going on in his mind? Is he able to? We may never get the real answer to why, not in his words anyway. But what we do have now, thanks to the lifting of the gag order, is evidence, real insight. And Howard Bloom has helped us connect dots that were just kind of scattered headlines a few months ago. At 6 p.m., or 6 a.m., rather, phone call to his dad. Not random. The K-Bar knife purchased before even he arrived in Pullman. Not a coincidence. The stalking pattern. The possible fixation on Maddie Mogan. The failed attempts to play normal by going to pool parties and grading papers. All of it paints a picture. Not of a master criminal, but of a man trying desperately to become one. And Robin hit it square on the head. This wasn't some spontaneous act of rage. It had a trajectory. It escalated. The planning was meticulous, even if the execution wasn't perfect. And if Howard's right, if Koberger really took the plea to spare his parents from testifying, then his final move wasn't just self-preservation, it was self-curation. Controlling the final act, even if it meant life behind bars. But here's a question that still lingers, and maybe always will. Was this it? Or was this just chapter one in a longer playbook that got cut short? We may never see the murder weapon. We may never know if there were other targets. And without a trial, we lose the full public record, the kind of granular disclosure that only comes from lawyers battling over every last detail in open court. Still, the conversation pulls back the curtain a little more. And sometimes that's the best kind of justice we can get. So now's your turn to sit with this. What does justice actually look like in a case like this? And if Koberger wanted to be studied, dissected, and remembered, what does it say about us that we keep trying to give him exactly that? Let me know in the comment section on our YouTube channel. If you're not there already, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and join in the commentary there. If you're listening to us on the podcast platforms, be sure to press subscribe there so you don't miss any of our coverage of this case and the many that we cover for you here at True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Looking forward to seeing your feedback. Thanks to Howard Bloom for his fearless reporting, to Robin Drake for always pushing the psychology deeper, and to you for listening, thinking, and staying curious. My name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.